We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Keeping the Faith. My name is Don Nolan. I'm filling in for Steve this afternoon. Welcome to the program. Our topic this afternoon is gay issues, national and local political issues associated with gay concerns. And our two guests this evening are John Eby, who is Activities Program Manager at the Office of Student Life at Parkland College. John, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for the invite, Don.
And we also have with us Kevin Johnson, who is the current president of the Board of Directors of the UP Center. Thank you for coming, Kevin.
Thank you very much.
I thought what we'd do before we got into the various national and state and local issues associated with gay politics or related issues, that we get to know you all just a little bit. Kevin, how long have you been at Parkland College as the activities program manager?
Oh, that's John.
I'm sorry, John.
That's
me.
All right.
We'll get going right.
10 years, fully 10 years, and 10 years and 2 months. How about that?
Yeah.
since July of 2000, and so have now started my 11th year there.
You're also a part-time instructor?
Part-time instructor in the Office of Social Sciences and Human Services. I teach a course that is listed as Psychology 109, Psych 109, and it's an introduction to college course for first year. Most often it's for first year students and those who are returning to college and are trying to figure out how to focus their efforts, what they might be interested in is in a career.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly it does a lot of, sort of self-examination or analysis or self-study to sort of get themselves focused, ready to be good, practicing good study skills, time management, career education, and life planning. How about
it's kind
that?
Of like an orientation to college.
Exactly, yes. Originally the course was orientation.
Right.
Yeah, orientation 101. So,
right. Where'd you go to school?
Well, I have my bachelor's from Illinois Wesleyan over in Bloomington. I have my master's from here at University of Illinois, both in fine arts.
Ah. And Kevin, what is the UP Center and why are you president of it?
Well, the UP Center is UP stands for Uniting Pride. It's the Uniting Pride Center of Champaign County. It's a new community center for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, questioning, and ally community. It was started, we incorporated with the state as a nonprofit in January of this year, and since have received our 501c3 status through the federal government, and recently hosted as with the help of a lot of community, including the Parkland Ally Team, this community's first organized Gay Pride Festival.
Now, you are also an education consultant, I think?
I am. I have my own business called The Cutting Ed, and there I help...
ED.
ED, yes, The Cutting Ed. In that position, I help institutions, academic, and private organizations utilize online online education to enhance their programs. And so I've helped organizations write strategic plans on how to implement distance education. I have I teach online for multiple institutions things such as instructional design, introduction to online education. Most of my students are faculty wishing to transition to the online environment. And I have the book version of John's class. I just co-authored Online Education for Dummies with Dr. Susan Manning, which is an introduction to students on how to be a good online student. So
a lot of students need that.
Exactly.
I teach an online class.
Yes.
And that is very true.
Discipline. That's what they
are. You're also, I think you mentioned you have technology tool belt for teachers.
Yeah, the technology tool belt for teacher is our second book that is in its final editing stage, and we're hoping to have on the shelf in March or April of 2011.
Where'd you go to school?
I have my bachelor's in recreation administration from Eastern. I spent my first 2 years at Parkland. And then I received my master's in curriculum instruction from here at the University of Illinois College of Education. And I just finished my doctorate coursework in instructional technology, distance education from Nova Southeastern University in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. So
when you were in curriculum instruction, is that when you got interested in online or was it earlier?
Actually, it was earlier. Back in the late 80s, I was actually a computer programmer for Play-Doh terminals right here at the University of Illinois at CERL, the Computer Engineering Research Lab.
You don't look old enough to be from the Jurassic Age.
Well, thank you. But believe it or not, yeah, I actually started...
Those touch things where you touch the screen and all
They had touch screen, they had email, they had chat. They were way beyond their time. I mean, if you look at distance education now, all of our textbooks in any distant education program always mentions Play-Doh. And, yeah, I started that at a fairly young age, but got really...
Well, we'll have to have both of you back for another education topic. The topic for today is gay issues, national and local, and you're on Keeping the Faith. This is a call-in show, and as we get into the program, if you have any questions that you would like to ask our guest, you can call in locally at 333-9455. There's also an 800 number, which you can use, 1-800-222-9455. Well, this is a very interesting time for issues having to do with gay politics, lesbians, gays, bisexual, and transgendered issues all across the country. Before we dive into the specifics about what's going on out there, do you have any general gloss, the two of you, Kevin and John, about is this the beginning game, the end game? Are we in transition or what nationally with getting acceptance for things like marriage equality for gays? Where do you see this in some broad general sense?
We are right in the thick of it. Is my impression.
You see progress?
Oh, yes, absolutely. In the last probably 4 years, the wave has crested significantly. I mean, it's strong movement in favor of rights, of civil rights, of equal rights and equal opportunity. Strong movement toward recognition of the discrimination that happens, of admission of prejudice, and really the changing of minds, I think in a very strong way, it has always been a grassroots movement, and the people
from the bottom up.
Yes, absolutely, from the bottom up, and people have pushed our local governments, have pushed our state and our national governments and local, state, and national politicians for recognition, for to bring them into the understanding of the issues, how it affects individuals, how it affects families, how it affects communities. An incredible number of urban planners and taking on the idea and discussing the idea and certainly writing about the idea that inclusiveness, diversity, multiculturalism, equal opportunity, equal rights are what help communities and regions not only survive but thrive. And it's all wrapped up in that together.
I want to hear what Kevin has to say, but we do have a caller on line one. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. Question or comment?
Yes, comment. Good evening. And I think the two gentlemen who were invited to participate are very knowledgeable, and I commend them for that. And I've heard you, Mr. Nolan, interviewing people before. However, I hear no female voices. And once again, it looks like the lesbian community has been totally ignored. And I resent that.
Well, we will try to correct that in future with a future program. I think your point is well made.
Who left the lesbian community out of this discussion?
Well, originally I had invited John because I knew his work at Parkland. Did not take it much further than just that topic, gay issues, national and political, but
and
we'll
women,
certainly try to address that.
Lesbian women have a lot to say on that, so I'll just leave you with that thought, and thank you for the opportunity to contribute my comment.
Thank you for your comment.
Bye.
Kevin, you want to address this broad general issue of where we're at? Do you have any take on progress, regress? How do you see the national and local issues at this point?
Well, I kind of agree with John. I think we're in the thick of it. I think thanks to media, social networking, and that we see whenever there's an influx of steps forward, that there are also oppositions to those steps. So there's this kind of, are we really making progress? Are we not? And I think when we look nationally and locally, especially for me in my role as a local community organizer locally, I really do see a lot of progress. For example, just in the ability to speak with schools. 10 years ago, this is my hometown, and 10 years ago, speaking in the high schools was unheard of, or anything below high school, whether it be junior high, middle school, elementary. Yet several weeks ago, I spoke to my son's preschool class. So things like that really show a lot of progress. And just the questions that I'm asked when presenting go from this, when you ask questions like, does anybody know anybody in the LGBTQ community, and nobody in the school raises their hand, to now that's a moot issue. Like, now we're getting actually questions about how does marriage affect you and your family, and just we're having much more profound conversations in the schools, and that alone to me shows a lot of progress.
And you're quite young for you to see that change just in your lifetime is remarkable.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like I said, this is my hometown, and I go back to schools where I attended, and to see the dramatic change and the support from the administration that we have is amazing.
Mm-hmm. I do think, certainly in reference to the previous the caller, the movement owes an extreme debt of gratitude to the lesbian community and to feminism. And certainly to educators over the last 25 to 30 years and their absolute demand of inclusion, particularly feminism. And we know the strong ties between the feminist movement and the lesbian community and the lesbian population, and their absolute demand that inclusion be taught, that it be be understood. And so we come to the year 2010 with grade schools, junior highs, and high schools, doing age-appropriate education in the areas of diversity and the areas of multiculturalism.
Well, I'm very interested to hear more about your work in high schools and locally, what kind of responses you're getting. But why don't we kind of stick to the script here and just go to Proposition 8. What is it, and why should we care?
Kevin?
Well, Proposition 8 was a law passed in California that did not allow, that blocked gay couples from getting married. And this came after they were allowed to get married, unfortunately. And so
it was in response to a number of marriages that took place.
Exactly. So
was that all over the state, or mostly in San Francisco, or what? I don't recall.
Well,
the number of marriages.
It was mostly in San Francisco that I recall. I think obviously the media coverage is focused more specifically in gay issues, oftentimes in the San Francisco area. But it was statewide. And so Proposition 8 blocked that, actually reversed those that had been married in the state. And then recently, a gay couple and a lesbian couple were plaintiffs in a court case to appeal Proposition 8, and it was. And so right now, Proposition 8 is kind of in transition. Right now, it has been overturned, but obviously trying to be appealed to the Ninth Circuit Court in California and most likely going to make it to the Supreme Court.
The commentary I've seen is that the judge in that case that overturned it, Vaughn Walker, Judge Vaughn Walker, had a very impressive opinion that the implication of the commentaries that I saw was it's going to be a bit difficult for the next level up to overturn, and presumably it is going to go to Supreme Court, right?
That's what's presumed, mm-hmm. And you're right. The commentary made by the judge was very specific and very purposeful in making it very hard for, future decisions to be made otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Just simply by appealing to precedent and facts, right?
Yes,
exactly.
That was my impression of the opinion.
Exactly.
No one knows what to predict with the Supreme Court, but I think that in general it's going to be, my impression is it's going to be half and half. It's going to be a major split, just may turn on who is the swing vote.
I would believe that certainly to be the case. I think, you know, as people examine it, they tend to say that it would be another year and a half to 2 years, mm-hmm. before it would get there to the United States Supreme Court. Who knows? Mm-hmm. Who knows what would happen between now and then?
Now, we have several states that already have equal marriage acts, right?
Well, we do, as a matter of fact. Let's define several. We have five.
Okay.
five plus Washington, D.C.
Right.
Where actually marriage.
New Hampshire?
Yes. It is Vermont. New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Iowa, and Washington, D.C.
Right. Iowa just supported civil unions, is that right?
Marriage.
Full marriage?
Fully equal marriage.
Okay, mm-hmm. So they're added to the list, right?
Absolutely, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so we have six.
Well, it's New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Iowa.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
that's
so
right.
Six if we're, you know, counting Washington, D.C.
And then there's some transitional states. Civil unions seem to be, the passage of civil unions is presaging some positive movement.
Yes, presaging is a very good word. As whether it be considered an alternative to, or the precursor to, or another option, numerous states are considering civil union legislation, including Illinois, mm-hmm. To provide full and equal benefits and responsibilities at the state level for. Mm-hmm. Gay and lesbian couples.
Illinois still does not does not accept civil unions yet, right?
It does not.
Right. But there has been some progress with regard to legal rights. Is that right?
Yes. Well, as a matter of fact, January 1st of 2006 was when it was became law and was established that there would be no discrimination based on sexual orientation, on gender expression in the state of Illinois, whether it be in employment or housing or in business transactions. So January of 2006, Illinois joined a number of states that do have non-discrimination in their codes. Both the House of Representatives of the state of Illinois and the Senate have bills that have been introduced in their bodies that are yet to be even really discussed, let alone passed.
But they got out of committee, didn't they?
Yes, and there is a continual continual progress, whether it be inch by inch or, you know, yard by yard or mile by mile, there is progress toward the passage of civil union legislation in Illinois. And I think a number of our legislators have agreed that civil unions in Illinois would be a first step toward what would then be ultimately be a, you know, the giant step or towards what we would call marriage
equality. Is that how you all
equality.
Think of civil unions, as a giant step that opens the door?
I think there are different opinions on that within our community.
I do too.
I mean, our community obviously is a diverse community.
You mean you all don't think alike?
Exactly. It's always the first thing I say when I speak in a classroom is I don't speak on behalf of an entire community. There's no way I could do that. And I think there's a spectrum there of, yes, this is a first step. And as long as we don't see it as we don't stop and celebrate and kind of stop there, that there is – it is a first step to an end goal of true equality, which is marriage, then there are a lot of people within the community that are okay with that. I think there's also another opinion which is equally valid, which is doing these little steps continually perpetuates the fact that we are not equal in the community.
Suffering continues.
Yes. So so I think, you know, you do have that spectrum, and I think both points are valid. I think, obviously, that you have to assess the situation, assess the politics overall at the time, and what you can succeed at, because sometimes it takes baby steps to actually get to the end goal, just from the political perspective of just playing the game of what you can accomplish right then and there versus whether or not you can really accomplish your end goal right away or if it's going to take some time.
I think there's a great deal of appreciation also for the group within the LGBT population that are extremely adamant about there is no goal other than marriage equality, and that anything less is second class. And, you know, they are the ones that are holding everybody's feet to the fire to make it happen. And that, you know, and we can appreciate that, certainly. There is also a group of people, I am certain, because you hear, you know, blogs and news articles and everything from them is why would the LGBT population want to be assimilated into the
general
the straight or the general population? Why would we want anything like marriage? So there are, you know, arguments from all sides, from all philosophies, from all, you know, political points on the spectrum,
Which makes it healthy,
makes it lively,
makes it lively. And this, I think it does make it lively and healthy. It also, in some ways, in a good way. This sounds kind of negative, but in a good way, it makes things more difficult because we do stop and we talk about it, discuss, and have so many opinions about what direction to go into. That, you know, they say sometimes working in a team is more difficult, but the end result is always better.
The dynamics remind me so much of the history of the civil rights movement. The ministers who showed up from Birmingham into Martin Luther King Jr.'s jail when he was telling them, well, you tell me.
You tell me to wait.
You tell me to tell the little girl sitting in the back of the bus to wait longer. And the tensions between the community that wanted change now as opposed to incremental change, it's a sociological dynamic, right?
For
a social scientist, right?
It is.
It's tricky to figure out how to be sensitive to that and make sure that progress happens as opposed to is stymied.
It is.
Right?
It is.
Do you see on the national or the state level any threats to progress? I mean, there is a upsurge in the country of what some would call reactionary thinking about all of this. Is there a risk of setback that you see at all?
I think the setback comes when people buy into the falsehoods and the propaganda from the extreme right,
mm-hmm.
and the fear-mongering. Interesting you would bring this up, because just in this past month has been some amazing turnarounds for several people that would be recognized as as conservative, not only on the on the national level, but on the international level as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just turnarounds that would make you wonder why they had been so negative toward the LGBT community.
Mm-hmm.
Naming names, I mean, Ken Mellman, from the former
right.
chairman of the National Republican Committee, comes out as gay, a week to 10 days ago.
Right.
And, national political consultant for the 2004
George. A lot of folks are not quite sure how to feel about him, right?
Well, yes, I think everybody has a strong has a strong opinion about him and his work on the 2004 campaign of George W. Bush, because that was when, he ran on, probably three major issues, one of them being we will
right.
pass a constitutional amendment, a United States constitutional amendment against marriage equality, or
right.
that, traditional, in favor of traditional marriage. So,
well, this program is subtitle Issues in Religion, Ethics, and Spirituality. So I want to kind of cut to that tack just a little bit. But let me just remind our listeners that this is Keeping the Faith. This is a call-in show. Our guests this afternoon are Kevin Johnson, who is the board of directors, current president of the UP Center, and John Eby, who is at Parkland College, doing some excellent work with our students and also with the ALLE program, which we're going to hear more about later. So we have a caller on line one. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. Question or comment?
Hi. I don't know. I guess I want to stir you up. I just wonder why anybody supports a class of people that, because they happen to be in love with somebody else, their union means that whoever has the highest benefits both of them, instead of everybody in the United States getting health care, for example. I know a lot of hetero couples that are married just for the reasons of the benefits. And to me, that kind of, I don't know, I don't think that really makes the quality of their union any better. And I guess I'll just hang up and listen. Thanks.
Thank you.
I'd kind of like to address that from a parent's perspective, because my partner and I have been together 8 years and we have a child. And financially, and I think the caller is absolutely correct in that benefits don't determine the quality of your relationship. However, equality within the community really does set precedence as to how you are treated overall from others. So my relationship with my partner has nothing to do with – the quality of my relationship with my partner has nothing to do with the quality that we do or do not receive outside of our relationship. And being equal in issues such as healthcare means that we don't pay more for our health care. Right now, my partner and I have to have separate health insurance policies because the state of Illinois doesn't recognize us as a couple, even though we are registered on the Urbana Registry. We have been together 8 years. We are both, by state law, our son's father. And yet, because we're not recognized by the state, we are required to have two separate insurance policies that then make us have a completely separate set of deductibles, which then relates
increased premiums.
Increased premiums, absolutely. So from that perspective, there are a lot of important issues in this country right now, including health care for everyone. But I also believe that equality is also important.
Now, in Illinois, do you have the right, if your partner is sick, Are you the next of kin, or is it someone in his family?
It requires the extra paperwork. You do have to have medical power of attorney. Mm-hmm. So you really have
Which is an extra step that so-called legally married people, heterosexual couples, don't have to do.
May not have to do, correct. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you do have to know those intricacies of the law of what you can and, mm-hmm. you know, what is a part of you as a couple and what isn't. Buying a house together, finances together, the ability to see each other in the hospital in emergency situations all require a lot more paperwork, oftentimes lawyer fees, et cetera, simply because we're not recognized as a couple.
And those are all tolerable to some degree until you just keep getting it thrown in your face that you really are second class.
Right. And having to explain that to your son is difficult. I mean, not only do I have to, for lack of a better word, tolerate all these coming at me and keep telling me that I'm different, but I have to explain to our son, who has no bias about having two dads. He is three, able to articulate that he has two dads, that he is adopted, and that. But to explain to him that at times we are not treated the same as other parents is difficult because he doesn't understand that, and he doesn't understand why people would think differently of us than anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Want to add to that, John?
Well, I think that it sort of explains the difference, you know, relatively simply between civil unions and full marriage equality. The civil unions, everybody could probably at one point say, well, yeah, I think everybody should be treated equally in technical terms. You shouldn't have to pay more than this person, or this couple shouldn't have to pay more than that couple. This couple should be allowed to do this to see their partner when he or she is in the hospital and be considered their immediate next of kin, that the simple words "I do" should not create all of these differences. But the fact of the matter is, when a male and female say "I do," they are given thousands of rights, that same-sex couples then do not have.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's something like 1,039 is the different.
Really?
You know, yes, uh-huh, that same-sex couples.
So you
do
just
not
essentially
have.
Named two.
Well, a short list includes automatic inheritance and responsibility for each other's debts.
I was just going to ask about that one.
Yeah. All of those kinds of things, the rights to see them in the hospital, the rights to make medical decisions, the list goes on and on.
Mm-hmm.
But what it goes back to is the quality and, you know, the huge connotation of marriage that we've placed on marriage, you know, the value of marriage, the meaningfulness of
the value
marriage.
Of family values.
Well, there you go. Exactly. And there is a large, significantly large number of people in the United States, certainly, that believe that same-sex couples should not have that. They might be able to get this, but you can't have that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That constantly hits you in the face whenever you confront these little big legal problems as you go through the history of
absolutely,
your marriage.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, back to your comment that the subtitle of the program is Religion and Spirituality. It's loaded. Marriage is loaded with that.
Right.
I agree. I think when you start to I'm actually personally okay with the term civil union if we made it across the board for everyone and we took out the religious connotation that comes with marriage and the federal and statewide benefits that come with what is currently titled as marriage came with civil union. I'm actually a proponent of that simply because then we kind of separate the two. And then if people wanted to take it a step further and be married in a church and have that component to their relationship, that would be their decision to make. Whereas, I mean, I really do believe that the water is muddied between whether or not this is a religious issue or whether it is a governmental issue.
Right. Mm. The government is currently in the marriage business. You know, they currently are. But, well, and probably because there's never been any other word
local
for
local governments.
That's right. And so if local governments were and state governments were in the civil union business and out of the marriage business or the business of, quote, marriage.
Does that general idea have much traction across the country? Have you heard much talk about moving in that direction? I'd be surprised if it did. Because marriage is considered, like you say, almost like a sacred cow.
Yeah, I think it depends, again, on the community that you talk to. I think there's individual opinions about that. I think if you were to say we're going to wipe this slate clean and we're going to start over with two definitions, civil union for any two consenting adults that want to have a relationship and be recognized by the government, and then
with all those 1,000 legal rights.
1,039 legal rights that go along with them,
yeah.
I think you might get more on, more backing for something like that. But we all know that that's not going to happen. So it's really hard because right now that's not what the term civil union means. It means a separation of treating you, you know, it's like, okay, well, we're going to give you this, but we're not going to title it this because of this one little unspoken piece that usually is the connection to religion.
Just a reminder to our listeners, this is a call-in show. This is Keeping the Faith. We are talking with John Eby, who is Activities Program Manager of the Office of Student Life at Parkland College, and Kevin Johnson, who is the current president of the Board of Directors of the UP Center, and we're talking about gay politics, national and local issues. And if you'd like to call in to put a question or make a comment for our guests, our number locally is 333-9455. You can also call an 800 number, 1-800-222-9455. Well, just in general, you don't have to respond to this if you don't want, is your religious background as you think about this question? I ask this in the context of, wouldn't you agree that so much of the change that is happening has emerged from the churches in many respects? It hasn't just come from the secular society. Many church organizations and other religious organizations have been involved at the forefront of changing people's minds and attitudes to simply think about what would Jesus do. Well, let's think more broadly about just exactly whether or not Jesus would support equal marriages. And if you think that through, and
I have to say we have some really wonderful local churches here that are affirming, that are working in the community to really let them know that they're affirming and that they can still have a relationship with God and be a part of the LGBTQ community. In this area, we have some wonderful churches a part of the UP Center.
Well, the religious community back in the civil rights era played a significant role in getting a broader spectrum of the population, including the middle class, to accept change for African Americans. My impression is, and I really, it's just anecdotal, the same is happening with the issue for gay politics. Do you have any perspective on that at all? How do you think about this from a religious perspective?
Well, I think that's true. I think it's a generational shift within the religious communities and within denominations. I think
it certainly seems to be a dividing point between progressive and conservative Christianity.
Absolutely.
And within Judaism.
Yes. And within the great religions. Yes. Again, I think it's a generational shift in the religious community. And I think it is probably being the greatest assistance is coming from the Protestant community, in terms of denominations and individual churches thinking more progressively, thinking more openly. You know, each of the organizations have sort of their own terminology for it, whether it is open and affirming or whether it is considered more light is another expression that is used. Probably at the top of the heap that has been thinking about it the most and has done maybe the most about it would be the Lutheran community. Mm-hmm. Have
the Presbyterian certainly is out
Presbyterian
there.
Presbyterian is on their way. The United, the Congregationalist churches, mm-hmm. the UCC churches, Disciples of Christ, certainly some of the Presbyterian churches mm-hmm. have worked significantly toward equality and again this idea of openness and affirmation.
We have a caller on line one. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. You have a question or comment.
Hi. I'd just like to, you know, commend you guys for your good work. And I guess the question I always ask myself and some of my friends is, what on earth is everyone so afraid of in this, you know, for civil unions or marriage between people of the same sex? This fear-mongering that the right seems particularly of late to be promoting is just very disturbing. So I wish you and all of us the very best luck. And we have to persevere, don't we?
Thank you for your comment.
Well, yes, there's no stopping now. perseverance is truly what is going to bring everyone towards the, you know, success. Yeah, fear-mongering. I don't know. You know, every time I think about the word homophobia, I think, well, of course, phobia is a fear, but we throw that around in a lot of different ways, but it is. I mean, it's based on some irrational fear or some inexplicable fear. I would guess that maybe the person who you ask, well, why are you such a homophobe or why are you so homophobic? I'm not sure they could actually say why. Many probably could. Well, I just hate the thought of two guys, whatever. Or it's that sort of mm-hmm. ick factor. You know, I don't know what the fear is all about. People are taught also, you know, generation after generation, you're taught to fear and you're, you know.
Most phobias don't have an argument.
That's right. I hated riding up the elevator here. You know what? This afternoon, tight space.
Yeah. If I could answer that to, you know, if I could explain to my 3-year-old why someone hates his dads for loving each other, we would have a lot of problems in this world solved. But. Mm-hmm. It's true. I mean, I feel it's similar with race as far as my background. I come from a very homophobic and very racist background. And some of the things when I challenged those are in my family around me that shared those views to express why they were, they themselves really didn't understand other than this learned response to how they were taught to respond to differences, and these were differences that they couldn't get over.
I think we have another caller on line one. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. Question or comment?
Yes, hi, how are you? First of all, I'm sorry I just tuned in. I hadn't been home. And do I hear Kevin's voice?
Yes, you do.
Oh, good. Okay. My first question is, have we all collectively decided or not that there, in this country, there is a separation of church and state?
there are certainly those who would like there to be no separation.
But have we decided that there is?
No.
We have not decided that there is.
I think
I was just wondering with this church and that church and this synagogue and whatever weighing in on this issue and then telling the state what they've decided just sort of seems to me muddles up the whole thing. Like, why would the state care? and why should they care, and shouldn't they not care? I mean, shouldn't they be separate from all this, and doesn't weighing in on it just sort of muddy the waters?
You mean by a church or community?
Actually making, you know, each church making a decision, maybe we'll get a majority of churches, and then we tell the state, okay, the majority of churches agree, so go ahead. But isn't that like not okay?
Well, yes, absolutely. And what the state should say is we don't have any, you know, what the church says and what the church wants us to do, we don't have any concern for.
Exactly.
And we will proceed in the direction of equality.
Exactly.
But many states and many politicians and many, you know, individuals expect, bow down to what their organized religion has to say. And I guess, you know, states and people and municipalities and governments allow that to happen, I guess. And it shouldn't.
It's interesting. It was about 6 months ago or something, I heard a report, and I believe it was on NPR, that stated that 78% of Americans identify as Christian. And so if you think about that, that also means those that are going to Washington and to the state level and making these decisions, a large portion of them identify as Christian. And as human beings, we tend to, and I'm not justifying the actions and not the inability or the muddying of the water of state and church, but it is, as human beings, we tend to carry what we participate in one environment to another, and I think that has a big part of it. I mean, you know, part of me is really frustrated with the words "In God We Trust" on our money, or that people are upset that a child is by choice not wanting to say the Pledge of Allegiance or leave out God in the Pledge of Allegiance, when them doing that just is not hurting anyone. It's allowing them to discover that. Because I truly believe that spirituality is a personal relationship between you and God, and not something that goes beyond you and God. It is between the two of you. And I think when we expand it to a full community, we start muddying the waters.
Does the questioner want to respond?
Well, I agree. And when you're signing up for a license with the state, they don't say to you, say I do, or say you do in God. They're like you present, I don't know, your blood test or something, and then you sign a paper, right?
Right.
And then it opens up the door to you getting this 1,000 perks from the government. Mm-hmm. And then you go on your merry way. But then I don't really know what happens. Then you go to somebody who is licensed, presumably a judge or a religious person who's licensed, and those people have to turn the paper in before you are deemed married? Or did you get married when you, signed the paper at the courthouse initially, the sign up for the license?
Well, I can tell you that from I do have the ability to – this is going to be funny. Everybody's going to laugh at me, I'm sure. But I actually am ordained and can – perform ceremonies.
So did you marry yourself?
No. But
grandpa. You married yourself.
That's right.
When I married friends of ours, it is considered legal when it has the signature on the paperwork from either the clerk at the city building or the member of the clergy that signed on your behalf.
One of those little areas where church and state kind of step on each other's
toes. Yes, they do.
Mm-hmm. So, did you just say you are married when you initially go apply for and sign for the license? That's when you're actually married. You don't have to do anything else, or you actually do have to go to another party.
It depends if you want it to be religious-based or if you want it done at
the
courthouse.
Now, what does the state say? Order to get the government benefits?
It is a legal contract, and I'm sure that a lawyer would tell us that that there is a moment, such as the signature on the paper or whatever it is, that it becomes binding. I don't know what it is, but it is a secular legal contract, right?
Yes, it depends. Again, if you want to go to the courthouse and get married, there's a difference between the application, where you have to tell them you are wanting to get married, and the actual marriage. And if you want a religious marriage, then you take the paperwork away, and after the ceremony, according to our rules, we have to wait till after the ceremony, and once the ceremony is complete, it's signed. If you go to a courthouse, then it's signed there, and it's a piece, you know, but it's basically, again, where religions and government kind of step on each other's toes.
Each other. I see.
Yes.
So there is a big old mess right there.
Exactly.
We do have a someone contributing to this online. KJ Kroha says, I think you have to get the license, and after the ceremony, the two parties and pastor have to sign it, and it must be filed.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Does that help?
Yep.
All right. Well, that's certainly...
What did we not get to here today?
right.
Several things.
I would very... did the caller want to have anything else to say about that? Are you still with us?
I think she's gone.
I think you're gone. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I would like... we just have about 8 or 9 minutes left. I'd like to focus on two things, a little bit more about... We started at national, state, and we're talking a little bit about local. What's going on here locally? And I'm particularly interested in your work in the high schools and with the young people. I used to be on a school board locally, and it was very touchy trying to bring these issues up. That seems to be the case that in a public high school or middle school or elementary school, that's one of the trickiest places to – it's a landmine with so much out there. You want to talk about that a little bit first, and then we'll talk about other things going on?
Sure. For the students themselves, the Up Center has a actual support group for junior high and high school students. But in regards to policies and procedures, we actually have a group in town that's a separate group. It's called ECISSA, E-C-I-S-S-A, the East Central Illinois Safe Schools Alliance. And their sole focus is policies, procedures within the schools, helping schools start GSAs. And working
Gay Straight Alliance, GSA.
Yep, GSAs, great Gay Straight Alliances. Helping them in situations where if there is discrimination based on perceived sexual orientation or gender identity, they can step in and help, et cetera. So we have a wonderful group in this area that has a slew of wonderful volunteers, including administrators in the schools, ACLU representatives, and the students themselves here in this area to focus on that. I personally go in and speak to a couple upon individual request and getting more and more. But, of course, I tend to refer those now to the ECISSA group.
Mm-hmm. We have a caller on line one. Welcome to Keeping the Faith. Your question or comment to our guest?
Yes, I'm concerned because I'm a parent of a boy who died of AIDS, and I know several other parents whose sons died that way. And it was a factor of the hidden life that our gay and lesbian children have to endure. We know very little about it, but I think it's a great concern, and I wonder if there is any research going on about how those underground worlds that take the lives of our children, how those people are being treated as this change occurs in our society.
Thank you for your comment.
First of all, sorry for your loss, and we do have some wonderful resources in this area that are reaching out to the community. We have the Greater Community AIDS Project, GCAP, in this area that focuses on members with HIV.
Oh, and they've been, 24, 25 years in the community?
Wonderful group.
Yeah, excellent work.
And also helping them out is the CU Public Health District here in town, also working with different groups. They have different programs and services, including prevention services as well. Both provide a variety of services depending on what you need. So there are some, and right now. I can't remember the specific ages, but they're pretty young right now in this community of those contracting HIV.
Mm-hmm. The caller is correct in a way that AIDS may have fallen off of many people's radar screens, mm-hmm. simply because of the increased number of medications, the success, the incredible success of managing AIDS as a chronic illness rather than as a fatal disease, so it has become sort of pushed to the back of a shelf but in no way has it really disappeared. Mm-hmm. I mean, AIDS is certainly there. It is still part of a community. It's still part of it's growing significantly now in minority female populations, and in the minority population in general. I think as students, and this relates back to the idea of how going into the, educating younger generations, educating younger people, students are coming out of the closet earlier and earlier. Certainly.
Average age right now is 11 to 14.
11 to 14.
Really?
And,
yes. Across the country?
Yeah, that was actually a New York Times article, I believe, that focused on that. It was a full-fledged article on mm-hmm. Nationwide statistics, and mm-hmm. 11 to 14 right now.
And it just speaks to the fact that educational systems are going to have to address it openly, address it honestly, certainly at the public school level. More and more private institutions are having to, whether they be religion-based or whether they be, just a private school, are having to address those issues as well.
We just barely have a minute left. Yeah. Just very quickly, what is it like to be aware that you are gay or lesbian, transgendered in high school and afraid to come out?
Well, I mean, for me, it was extremely difficult, and it took me until the age of 24 to actually come out. We do have more coming out at earlier ages, but through our work at the Epps Center, we are really finding that there are still several people closeted, still hearing things like fag, no homo in the schools, jokes being said that are keeping people in the closet because they do not feel safe to come out. Yeah. And so it's definitely still an issue. People think it's getting better, but especially at the high school age, you're really impressionable. And we
need to wind up here. Okay. Just a quick announcement before we say goodbye. Raj Mohan Gandhi is going to be speaking on September 19th at the Champaign Public Library on the role of nonviolence in Palestinian-Israeli relations, a conversation with Raj Mohan Gandhi at the Champaign Public Library. John and Kevin, thank you very much for being with us. It was a stimulating program.
Thank you.
To have you back again with a representative from the lesbian community.
Yes,
absolutely.
You've been with us for Keeping the Faith. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.